The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2022, Living Liberation, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, you can visit libraplanet.org/conference.
He's worked on the time zone database since 1992 and currently serves as the Internet Engineering Steering Group's primary coordinator for TZDB. Welcome, Paul.
Well, thank you. And so this talk is going to be a little bit technical. And if you look at the slides, they're mostly technical. But, you know, underneath that all, there's going to be some politics, because when you're doing any sort of long-term project like this, politics inevitably intrudes, both internal and external. So although I'm going to be doing mostly technical stuff while I'm talking about it, I want you to sort of think about how these technical problems sort of are backed up by or underlie politics. So anyhow, I've worked on a lot of GNU stuff, as that introduction said, but today I wanted to talk about something that's not a GNU project, which is the time zone database. So this database is in some sense very simple, because all it does is keep track of what time it is. It's running in your cell phone, it's running on the laptop that I'm giving this talk on, which is running Ubuntu and has a copy of TZDB. It's probably running on the machine that you're using to watch my talk and all that sort of thing. And this database contains a complete history of all the clocks in the world since 1970, at least all the clocks keeping official civil time, that is, time established by civil authorities. It's a project that's ongoing, right, because the authorities keep changing the rules, and also we find out mistakes in the database and have to fix it. It's almost all public domain, so unlike, you know, the GNU projects that I work on, it's not GPL or anything like that. There's a little bit of code that came from BSD a long time ago, and that's Berkeley licensed, but everything else is public domain. The contributors are from all over the world. They've been very helpful. They're not paid. There's no money changing hand for any of this. It's remarkably successful in the sense that it's widely used, used by industry, used by academics, and all that sort of thing. So the problem that it solves is one of politics. That is, governments are, you know, responsible for establishing civil time. I suppose we could have a system with no government and no time. We tried that, and it didn't work very well. But the governments sometimes change their minds. They'll either decide, oh, well, we were in this time zone, but let's move the clocks ahead or move them back. We'll move, in effect, move time zones. More commonly, they do this in a repetitive sort of way and have daylight savings times rules in which they effectively change time zones twice a year, spring forward, fall back, on a preset schedule. And the problem here is that when you're dealing with, you know, data that comes in from the real world, you have to convert timestamps that use local time in Baghdad or local time in Los Angeles and convert them back and forth to other localities or to universal time, that is the time set in Greenwich. So in some sense, the time zone database started off from a success story. And the success story is the original Unix, which was developed by Bell Labs in the early 1970s, and originally for internal use when the law prevented AT&T, which was a telephone monopoly, from entering the computer business. They were worried that AT&T would take over the computer business as well as telephones. And as a result, the software developed at Bell Labs was not as proprietary, shall we say, as it might otherwise have been. Also, AT&T's network, you know, crossed time zone boundaries. It covered all of the United States and Canada and that sort of thing, or at least a good chunk of those areas. So they knew very well the problem of synchronizing local time from different time zones, more so than most other computer users at the time. And therefore, from the start, Unix did not run on local time. It ran on universal time. And in that sense, it was ahead of, you know, software like MS-DOS or that sort of thing, where people were just running local time. Now, just as an aside, you might be thinking, this is a lot of history. Why am I telling you this history? But again, here, this project is unusual in the sense that it has to be very stable. It has to deal with data that's meant to be around for a long time. And in trying to predict how this project will evolve in the future, we have to see sort of how it evolved in the past. All right, so Unix, the Unix operating system uses a kernel model that's still very widely used. Linux still runs kind of the same way. It had a single system call, that is a call from applications into the kernel in order to find out what the time was. And its system call was called ftime. That's a system call that's not used anymore. Linux kept it around for a while, but has removed it in recent versions for a newer system call. But looking back at that traditional system call, it yielded four numbers: a count of the number of seconds since the epoch, which is the start of 1970 GMT or universal time, no difference from our point of view, and the number of milliseconds since the start of that second. So it's really a millisecond count expressed as two integers. Third, the offset from GMT, the universal time offset. So for example, in Los Angeles, we're 8 hours behind universal time. So the UT offset would be, eight times 60 times 60 seconds, the negative of that. And a flag. The flag was a Boolean specifying whether daylight savings time is ever observed on the system. Not whether it's in progress now, but whether sometime during the year we're going to have daylight savings time. The idea being they were trying to model the way time worked in the United States in the 1970s. We had daylight savings time on a schedule. They kept changing the schedule, but whatever it was. And this last flag would sort of warn you, hey, wait a second. Your clock might change sometime in the next few months. All right, so that was the model designed by Turing Award winners who knew what they were doing, and it had problems. Okay, in some sense, this is the problems of success. Unix took off. First problem, to change the time zone or whether daylight savings time is ever observed, you had to recompile the kernel and reboot. And, you know, in a research system or a system maintained by a few people, that's okay, just recompile and all that sort of thing. If I want to move my computer from New York to Chicago, that's a big deal back in those days, and recompiling the kernel was not that big a deal. Second, the time zone was system-wide. If you were trying to use sort of a time zone in one process in your system, every process had to have the same time zone. You couldn't have different processes running for clients in different time zones. Third problem, The daylight saving rules were hard-coded in the C library. They were the rules for the United States. If you wanted to run your computer in Europe, you could change the time zone, but you'd either have daylight savings time following the US rules, which of course they didn't use in Europe, or you'd have to have no daylight savings at all and then change the clock by hand twice a year. So in some sense, what Unix had was sort of a US-centric problem. A system designed in the United States, worked okay in the US, a little clunky, but it just wasn't going to work elsewhere. All right. So the next step in the evolution of this was Unix System 5. By the time System 5 came out, Unix had escaped its Bell Labs origins. It was now a product. AT&T was trying to make money off of it. They'd somewhat escaped, I guess, the antitrust rules they had. And they fixed some of the problems that I just mentioned. First off, the kernel stopped keeping track of the time zone, right? It was only kept track of universal time. The original F-time system call, which told you what time zone you're in, that went out the window. Second, every process now has its own time zones. You could have a server where one process is running in Los Angeles time, a different one in New York time. And you specified the time zone by the TZ environment variable. Every process got to pick its own. And in System 5, for example, I could say, I'm using, you know, Pacific time by using something that looks like this, PST 8 PDT, which means I'm 8 hours behind Greenwich and I have daylight savings time and all that sort of thing. And then the C library obeys this environment variable, thus giving you the proper local time. But they didn't fix the hard part. And the hard part was the rules for when you switch back and forth were still hard-coded in the C library. So it was still the US rules, which meant people outside the US had to either change their clocks manually twice a year or tried to live by the US rules and switch four times a year or something even worse than that. So to fix this problem, we have a standardization committee. It's POSIX, which is the Portable Operating System Interface. That acronym, I think, was invented by Richard Stallman as part of this effort. They realized this problem that time zone values didn't work outside the US, not really. And so they, as in usual committee fashion, designed a complicated solution that would attack the problem but still didn't quite do enough. So here's what they would do for California. You could specify the time zone daylight savings time rules all in the TZ string. So here we're saying we're Pacific time, 8 hours behind GMT. We have daylight savings time, which is only 7 hours behind GMT. And we switch forward the third month, second week, Sunday at 2 a.m. And we switch back the 11th month, the first week on a Sunday at 2 a.m. So we specify both the time zone and the daylight savings time rules all in that one environment variable. So that's kind of long and hard to read. They have shorthands, but still it's a pain to get right. That is, the rule's going to look really complicated like this in Europe and even in the US. Getting the string exactly right, if you get the comma wrong or that sort of thing, it's going to be a pain. Plus, this only uses the daylight savings time rules that Congress has in effect for this year. If you try to interpret an old timestamp, it'll use this year's daylight savings times rules to interpret, a 1978 timestamp when they had different rules. So you get the wrong interpretation. Right? These problems were all well known by the 1980s, but this was as far as the standardization committee would go. So to fix this problem, we can thank the National Institutes of Health, actually not the entire organization. A software developer there, Arthur David Olson, recognized the problems I've just mentioned and fixed it by writing a modified C library, well, just the time zone part of the C library, and a time zone compiler called ZIC, for Zone Info Compiler. The central innovation here was to take those rules, those hard-coded rules, out of the C library and put them into data. The problem with putting them into data, though, is if you have the data files sort of be text or complicated, this might slow down timestamp conversion. People who deal with time want timestamp conversion to be very fast. So for performance reasons, Olson wrote a compiler that would take rules expressed in text form and generate sort of binary data that would allow this timestamp conversion to be really fast. That binary data is a special file format invented by Olson called the Time Zone Interface Format, or TZIF. And that's what ZIC generates. It's a special purpose compiler with this, running on for a special purpose language that generates this binary data. He published this on Usenet, which was back then a common way to publish interesting software ideas that you wanted to make freely available. It was picked up by Sun Microsystems, which had a popular operating system, SunOS, at the time, and it spread elsewhere. So now we have sort of the mechanism for actually doing a good job with time zones. But we're still not there. We don't have the data. I ran into this problem in the late 1980s. And early 1990s, I co-founded a software company called TwinSun. Most of our companies were based in Japan, but we had clients scattered elsewhere. And the database that Olson had put out had just one rule for Japan, one for a few other countries in the Far East, but not enough to cover all our potential customers. So I said, I'll help them out. And most of my work was somewhere else, but let's just fix this little problem. I started filling in the blanks for, you know, Malaysia and that sort of thing. I said, why not just finish the job for the rest of the world? How hard could it be? This is a fatal question to ask when you're developing free software, but I asked it anyway. So I went to the library because I was a member of the UCLA Alumni Association, and one of the perks was they gave me a lifetime library card. I found all the books I could find on what time it was around the world, and not just this year, but in previous years, because we wanted to handle timestamps in 1970 as well as 1989. And I found out that the people who cared most about this sort of thing were astrologers. Astrologers care because they want to cast horoscopes for people who are, say, aged 50, and they need to know how to convert a birth certificate in Manila in 1973, and all right, what time was it? Where were the stars and all that sort of thing? They need to convert that birth certificate time to universal time. So they had maintained, you know, astrology books trying to keep track of this. Of these books, by far the most detailed book was a series of sort of astonishing books by Thomas Shanks. I'll show you one of them. I don't know if you can see it, my video, but here's one of the books. And it's full of very small prints, right? That's 8.5 by 11, three columns, tiny, tiny print. Each one corresponds to a location in the world, and it gives a pointer to that location's time zone history. Wow, I thought, that's great. That's actually more data than I need. A little side thing on Thomas Shanks. His biography lists his date and time of birth, 2:55 Eastern Wartime, because that's what daylight savings time was called in the United States in 1942. He gained computer skills, but never got his humanities PhD, instead decided to do research the factual basis of astrological assertions, and wrote software to convert timestamps for these astrologers. And he did a lot of legwork. He gathered announcements from newspapers in Ohio and Indiana. He published a book about the US, later about the rest of the countries in the world. But his clients, his customers, back in the 1970s when he was doing a lot of this work, didn't have computers. So that's why he published that book. It's for the clients that didn't have computers. So I said, I'll take this data out of these books, convert it into time zone database format, fill in the blanks, and I'll be done. Well, as you can see from those books, there's way too much data there to just type it in. I could have scanned it, I suppose, but I wasn't interested in just cloning the data. I wanted to get the gist, what it really meant. So I read the entries carefully and by hand figured out what they actually meant and manually created time zone database style tables for the rest of the world. As I did that, I found out that the database that we had was, in many cases, incomplete. It was too simple. I needed to come up with more complicated naming scheme to come up with all the different possibilities, all the different places that it had different time zone rules. And so I settled on continent/city, such as Asia/Tokyo. I picked those names partly because I figured city names are reasonably stable compared to other possible naming conventions that would rely on country codes and that sort of thing. Country boundaries tend to change more often than cities. The cities stay around while the countries conquer them and all that sort of thing. So in some sense, I was trying to take a longer view there, not always successfully, as we'll see. All right, so here's what a time zone database entry might look like today. All right, so for Japan, instead of just having the one line that we would have back in the old days before I started on this, we now have 100 lines. Most of them are comments. So they justify the actual data entries with some script in Japanese, which I'm afraid I don't know how to read, but was contributed by one of our Japanese-speaking contributors and all that sort of thing. We no longer cite Shanks's for Japan because it turns out he had a number of errors in Japan. So here's what the entry looks like. This is the source code to ZIC, and it has two kinds of lines. Rule lines, which talk about daylight savings time, and then zone lines, which contain the names that I was mentioning, like Asia/Tokyo, and then specify what the main offset is from universal time, 9 hours ahead of GMT in this case, and what time zone rules they use and what time zone abbreviations they want to use. Japan mostly doesn't use daylight savings time. They haven't used daylight savings time since 1951, in fact, as you can tell from this rule set up here. Daylight savings time was imposed on Japan by its American occupiers. And the minute the occupier said, okay, Japan, you can run your own country again, the Japanese said, we're done with that. They went back to just having standard time. But they had it, and notice some interesting properties here. For example, from 1948 to 1951, they finished daylight savings time on the second Saturday in September at 25 o'clock, which really means 1 a.m. on Sunday, but that's how they wrote it in the law, so that's how we put it in the rules. All right, there's lots more data where this came from. I'm not going to bore you with it. But there's a problem. What I showed you for Japan was retrospective. Here's what Japan looked like in the past. But when you're converting timestamps, actually a good deal of them are timestamps set in the future. When I prepared for this talk, for example, I was told the talk would start at 2:15 p.m. Eastern daylight time, all right? And so I had to predict what the timestamp in the future would be, right? Even though it was standard time at the time. That's relatively easy in the United States, where the rules are relatively well known and they haven't changed for 15 years anyway. But there are other countries where the rules change every year, right? For example, Morocco's standard time is 1 hour, ahead of universal time. But during Ramadan, they have a daylight savings time that is in some sense negative. That is, they spring back at the start of their daylight saving time in Ramadan, and then they fall forward when Ramadan is over. And the problem with that is Ramadan is a month that's not in the Gregorian calendar, which our software knows about. It uses the Islamic calendar. And worse, the exact Islamic calendar is not something you can predict in the future. It depends on actual observations of the moon. It's a lunar calendar, and you have to actually see the new moon before you know the month starts, that sort of thing. And you can obviously make predictions about the moon, but they're very strict about it, the moon being something you have to actually see it for the months to start. The way Morocco gets around the problem is they actually have daylight savings time that starts a little bit before Ramadan and ends a little bit after that. And that way, if the moon observations aren't quite exactly the way they were predicted, people can still have you know, the clock being sort of normal during Ramadan. We have the problem, of course, that we can't really automate all of that. Or can we? This is where someone else came to my rescue. Ed Reingold and Nachum Dershowitz have written this wonderful book. I have it on my library, but I misplaced it, called Calendrical Calculations, which is the definitive source on converting calendars, not timestamps, but calendars. Its calculation code is written in Lisp, and there's a sort of a version of it that runs under GNU Emacs. When you run Meta X Calendar, you can use their code. And I've programmed that to predict the Moroccan Ramadan rules, which involve figure out when Ramadan is, and then add a few days before and after. And so here are my predictions for what Morocco will announce for 2023 and 2024. We don't know yet whether these predictions are correct, but you know, we sort of hope they are. All right. Well, the problem here, though, is even if we guess right for Morocco, and we have been guessing right for the last few years anyway, it's still not enough. The problem here is that governments can sometimes change their minds about what the rules will be. Congress in the U.S. could pass a law. In fact, the bill passed the Senate last week to cancel daylight savings time to make it permanent, but shift the time zones east, whichever way you want to look at it. Maybe that law will pass the House, maybe not. If it does, we're going to need to update the time zone database on my computer, on your computer, on our cell phones. Basically, billions of devices around the world will have to be informed about this change to the time zone rules. So what we do for this is we issue a new release of the time zone database data. Users don't copy that data typically directly from our release. Instead, it's redistributed. So for example, Ubuntu, the developers get a copy of the time zone database from us, and then they will release it to their users and that sort of thing. The methods of distribution depend on the device. So Android and iOS phones, I believe, they don't rely on operating system updates. They rely on their own distribution mechanism. But the idea is that the distributors will repackage the data, maybe even make some changes to it if they, you know, disagree with some of the details. Usually they don't, but there are some cases where there's discrepancies. And then they can use that new version and thus find out that the Palestinian government, for example, is changing the rules effective next week, right? So here, though, the problem is that this distribution mechanism is at best fitful. Many people don't update their cell phones to get the latest version of the operating system or the latest version of the data. Their cell phones, therefore, might disagree with the actual time, and then they're going to have to remember or set their time zone to be some location in a different country or that sort of thing. So the mechanism isn't perfect, But the idea is that at least it's better than everybody having to change their clocks twice a year on their phones. Now, here's a non-technical problem that I ran into in doing all this. After Tom Shanks passed away, the data, which you know is proprietary, was sold. The new owners of the data were not happy about the time zone database because their worry, and I think it's justified, is that people will start using the time zone database instead of paying them to know what time was it in, you know, New South Wales in 1957 or whatever. They sued Arthur David Olson and me in federal court for copyright infringement in 2011. And in response to that copyright lawsuit, the National Institutes of Health, which really is not supposed to be in charge of clocks, pulled the time zone database off the internet. We sort of had a problem. In this case, we were helped out by the Electronic Frontier Foundation. They came to the rescue. They found first-class attorneys who volunteered to defend us in Boston. We had legal precedent on our side in the sense that there was already a Supreme Court case that was almost exactly on point. The Feist case basically says that data, at least in the US, is free. You can copyright the form of data or how you present it or how you select it. But if your goal is to sort of present all the data, then you don't own the copyright on that data. Other people can use that data and, you know, present all the data in their format. Maybe not your form, but that'll be fine. So after a little bit of legal dispute, we were in the clear, although I was worried for a while about all the costs of defending yourself against even meritless suits. Luckily, I had never run Shanks's programs. I had only read his books and interpreted his data into the time zone database format. And that really is what saved us, I think, from any worries about copyright infringement. The time zone database briefly moved to Australia during that copyright ruckus, but the internet assigned a number authority volunteered to host it, and that's where it's still being hosted at iana.org/tz. In the process, as a result of all this, I've been now writing internet RFCs to, or co-writing, I should say. Other people have done actually more of the work than I have, to specify, for example, the format of TZIF files, or how to dynamically configure nodes on the internet according to their time zone. And this is sort of a volunteer position. I'm the coordinator. I can be replaced if I mess up big time or get hit by a bus or something like that. And we have a backup coordinator. Tim Parenti of Carnegie Mellon University has graciously volunteered to be the backup in case something like that happens. Politics has dug the problem of the time zone database, pretty much since it was created. And I, in hindsight, made two major mistakes when I took data from the astrologers. First, I trusted the data, but Shanks often invented the data. When there were gaps in the data, my guess, I haven't talked to him, he's passed away, is he just made stuff up to fill in the blanks. It's very tempting to do that because you want to look like the data is complete even when it's not. The second problem that I ran into is I adopted his lookup method, which was you look up the country, then the city in that country, and all that sort of thing. And I said, well, we'll just do something like that. I wrote a simple table that says, if you have in the country Japan, then you can use the Asia Tokyo sort of entry. And here's its latitude and longitude in case you don't know what Asia and Tokyo is. And I said, well, that's an easy table to write. How hard can that be? But In hindsight, that was probably my biggest mistake in helping to create this database. Because even though cities are less political than country boundaries, they're still controversial. Luckily, in some cases, like Kashmir, we've dodged the bullet by we didn't need any zones for Kashmir because its time zone history is the same as some other time zone. And so we just say, use that other city, not that sort of thing. But in some cases, for example, Simferopol, which is in Crimea, we're not so lucky. Crimea is part of the territory of Ukraine. Although Russia says it's part of the territory of Russia, we have a territorial dispute. And if you look at it, there's lots of territorial disputes around the world, some of which are causing great suffering. There are also concerns about spelling. How do you spell these things? Kiev, historically in English, was spelled K-I-E-V. Nowadays, it's much more common in news reports, it's almost universal that it's K-Y-I-V, but database like this needs stability. We can't keep changing names on a whim, and so we have to deal with, you know, spelling changes. And the Kiev spelling change is one that's currently on our list of things to do. There's also politics involved in the database itself. So, for example, I'm trying to coalesce zones that I put in by mistake in the 1990s because I was just mimicking chance. They were put in only for political reasons, okay? And because I'm trying to minimize the use of politics in the database, I would like to sort of merge them and just have single zones. But this effort has been highly controversial because the time zone database community naturally values stability. And you know, that controversy was quite severe last year. I almost, at least there were calls for me to resign from the position or whatever. Where do we go from here? Well, in the long run, and here I'm talking well past any involvement I'm going to have with the database, we definitely have some issues, right? But this is very long term. There's a very well-known problem in the year 2038 when 32-bit timestamps, which were the timestamps of the original Unix, become obsolete. They only go up to January 2038, and then we run out of 32-bit counters, if they're signed anyway. A good chunk of the world has moved to 64-bit counters. I'm hoping everybody who cares about time will have gone to 64-bit counters, and then that issue goes away. We also recently fixed a Y2242 problem that's inherent in GNU/TAR, that in fact, everybody who's distributing software via tarballs is going to run into problems in the year 2242 because it uses 33-bit unsigned timestamps internally, and the format has to change after that year. We've got a fix for that, and I can talk to you about it offline if you care. For today's most common platforms, which have 64-bit timestamps but 32-bit int, the standard C API stops working in the year 285 million or thereabouts. That is obviously well into the future. And in fact, you know, the Gregorian calendar and leap seconds are not going to be working by then anyway. So to some extent, we have a lot of issues. The main problem I see more is shorter term. The shorter term are political problems, both involving politics in the rest of the world. The dispute between Russia and Ukraine is just one of them. It could well be that Russia decides they want version X of the time zone database, and Ukraine says it wants version Y, and we have to choose, or we have two copies, or that sort of thing. There are also political problems within the time zone community itself. There's disagreement on what the scope of the time zone database should be. And I'm reasonably sure we're going to see at least attempts to fork or forks in the near future. I know of at least two attempts that are likely to happen. And in that case, we're going to have to deal with what happens if you have two timestamps coming from two different branches of the fork. How do you compare them? I am worried about those political problems, and I'll try to do my best to head them off or to keep things simple or what have you. That's what you run into when you're trying to do a software or a software data project of any sort that you want to be successful in the long term. And I hope that when you start or contribute to a long-term project of your own, that whoever's managing the project shields you from most of this stuff. Anyhow, all right, well, that's all I wanted to say. Are there any questions?
So far, it looks like there's some good humor over the astrologer influence on here.
Yeah, I'm afraid I don't see the list of questions or all that sort of thing. I was so busy sort of looking at the talk. But if you could just verbally tell me any of the questions that you think are interesting, or we could just finish up that talk.
So far, that's really, I think everyone's really enjoying this. So there hasn't been too much.
Yeah, it's funny, even amongst the astrologers, there are politics. So there are astrologers that were, you know, sort of on the side of free data for time as part of this dispute. You know, unfortunately, you know, they weren't the ones that had the copyright interest, so they couldn't really intervene on the side of the good guys. I could, if there's a little bit of time left, I could tell you about one other future issue.
That sounds great. Right. Yeah.
So here the problem is related to the International Space Station is in the news recently over the color of the astronauts' uniforms, but there's another issue, which is that if you're on the International Space Station, due to relativity, moving clocks run slowly, right? Your clock runs a little bit slower than a clock on Earth because you're moving with respect to the Earth. So someone, I think there's a Russian cosmonaut who currently holds the record for the most amount of relativistic time dilation that he's personally experienced. It's only a few milliseconds. But if we go further and further into space, this is going to be more of an issue. The clocks will start disagreeing with each other. It's sort of like leap seconds, except on steroids, because every spacecraft would have its own clock. Worse, if we ever settle on, say, Mars, we'll have to deal with the fact that the Mars day is longer than the Earth day, right? It's appreciably longer. And so, if we establish time zones on Mars, we'll have to keep track of the fact that the Mars day is longer than that. And other planets are even worse than that. My favorite example is Neptune, where the length of the day depends on where you are, because the equator rotates faster than the poles, or is it the other way around? But anyhow, the day is either 18 hours or 12 hours or something in between, depending on what your latitude is. So a lot of our model about time zones and daylight savings time completely goes out of the window on other planets. And that's going to wreak havoc with this software.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Here's a question. Have you had to deal with any direct political question from, say, a country that reached out inquiring you personally?
Yes. Yes, I have had some private communications. Most of the conversations of that sort occur on the time zone mailing list, so they're public. For example, the government of Palestine informed us on that mailing list of their recent rule changes and that sort of thing. But in some cases, governments have contacted me directly, I guess because they don't know about the mailing list or they don't want the publicity or that sort of thing. I've also been in contact with the U.S. State Department because we want to make sure we stay on good terms with all of these governments that are operating behind the scenes. You know, so that happens, but it's pretty rare. It's far more common. They just let us know on the mailing list because, I mean, what's the point of keeping your clock secret? I mean, that's ridiculous. This is an area where everything should be public.
Okay, another question. Do we handle different time systems like GPS time?
No. The time zone database does keep track of leap seconds. So in that sense, there is the connection. But almost all the users of the time zone database don't worry about leap seconds. So it's sort of one of our side things. It is used, you know, I guess like the NTP folks will often pick things up from our time leap second database. Part of the problem is the people in charge of leap seconds put out their announcements in a copyrighted form. We put out the announcements in a public domain form. So people pick it up from us, even though we're really downstream from the International Earth Rotation Service. But it's really not our primary goal. Our primary goal is civil time.
We're able to go a few minutes later if you'd like. And
sure, if you have further questions, just we'll keep talking. You can cut me off whenever.
Okay, hoping some more come through here. Not seeing any at the moment. I do believe we're a little ahead of the live stream, so that could have something to do with it. Well, with the little time here, I just want to thank you for a really engaging presentation, and I know I've certainly learned a lot. That there's much to learn. Yeah, thank you very much.
My pleasure. It was fun to talk.
And you left a lot of questions on the table for future consideration, and you know, we'll be monitoring the chat here just in case things come up and you're handy.
All right.
Okay. Thank you once again, and take care.